From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Friday, April 17th, and I'm your host, Andy Klein, filling in for Boston Christopher. Thanks so much for joining the conversation today. And on today's show, he's a musician, a writer, a videographer, and many of you will remember him as a former host of this show. And now he's a filmmaker, and he'll be here talking. It's Scott Burton. He'll be here with guests who are in his new documentary that's going to be premiering next week, Earnest Drinker. Then the Byrne Thompson Writers Group, they're having a poetry reading this Saturday, and we're going to hear about that and maybe hear some poetry too. And Cancer Connection is having a one-day workshop for cancer survivors who become peer buddies, and that's for people facing cancer. They'll let us know more about it a little later in the show. Those conversations are coming up ahead in this hour of Juno Afternoon. In the weather, the rain is settling in for a while. That's the consistent theme of the extended forecast.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
Hansen Gress, ka eat with the shu yi, we kashuk a yi tin. Jin katka ke jin talk anachaya haani kach gunish cheese.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Tongass Federal Credit Union, a member-owned financial cooperative offering checking and savings accounts, loans, and digital financial services. In Juno at 8585 Old Dairy Road in the K Plaza and at tongassfcu.com, federally insured by NCUA.
KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Kliné Di have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot which was once part of the Tidelands and is now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. And we recognize those families who traveled to and from these Tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations. Some who succeeded and some who... You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm your host for today, Andy Klein. Earnest Drinker, the film about a relationship with alcohol. Scott Burton is here as the producer and creator of that documentary. And Scott, thanks so much for coming in. It's been a long journey getting this film put together. I remember talking to you about this years ago now.
That's right, Andy. Yeah. And in full disclosure, you're one of the people who stepped up when I crowdfunded.
We need to fully disclose this because I've got some cash down
you do
in this.
On this film. So
I'm just a sucker, you know me. Also want to welcome to the studio Allison Wade.
Hello.
Who's also someone who's in this as a participant in the film, and also Tukku Hani Alicia Marriott. I hope I came close to pronouncing that correctly.
Thanks, Andy.
Yeah, thank you, Alicia, as well, for coming in, also a participant in the film, and as well as a kind of a large number of participants in the film. How did you choose the participants? Let's start there, maybe. We've got a lot to talk about with what this film is.
Yeah, it's a great question, and Allison is a perfect place to start. I call her my turning point mentor because actually sitting in, remember where KTOO used to be right over there?
The news studio now,
It was like 2016, I think, probably, right around the time I was 40. And we were on pitching for ATC, All Things Considered, or something like that. And somewhere in the middle of it was like, probably a Friday or something. I'm like, Allison, let's go out and have some drinks or something. She's like, oh, actually, I don't drink anymore. And I was like, what? What are you talking about?
Interesting.
Yeah. And Allison and I had worked together on like, what's the art?
Wearable
art. And we probably drank together during
that. Oh, I'm sure. Probably the whole time.
And we're both, you know, performers and everything that goes along with that. And I just thought that's what you did on a Friday night. You go drink. She's like, I don't drink anymore. And it was the first time in my life that one of my peers said that, and it was like, I didn't get it. I was like, why? What are you doing? Why would you not drink anymore? Like, I felt isolated or left alone. Like, why are you leaving the tribe? It was such a, it really hit me hard, but it planted a seed. And like I said, I was about 40, and I'm like, okay, Allison's crazy. I don't know what she's thinking about. I'm going to go have drinks. And then,
well, it's such an interesting way that you've framed the project, because so often when we talk about alcohol, people's relationship with alcohol, we're talking about people who've had really serious problems, health problems. That can be part of what you talk about. But a lot of what you talk about is just everyone's relationship, how it enters into how people form their lifestyle. And, you know, that's at least what I haven't seen the film yet, but that's at least what you talked to me about when we were talking a couple of years ago, now maybe even more than a couple of years ago, about what you were thinking about with this film. Is that correct?
Yeah. You know, it explores a lot of things. And Alicia and I have talked about how we both started drinking when we were 14.
Yep.
We're both alcohol free now, but, do you feel like telling a little bit about why you started drinking?
I mean, at 14, it was experimentation. Mm-hmm. My friends were starting to drink in eighth grade, and I wanted
I'm right there with you.
To
same
see
here,
what it
you
was
know,
about.
Seventh grade for me, but yeah.
Yeah. Right. So that's how it started.
Yeah, and I don't know about all of you, but everybody was drinking. Mm-hmm. My parents drank. My grandparents drank. All my friends were drinking. All the cool people were drinking, and so it was. You know, that's sort of what we call the normalization of alcohol. The movie goes into a lot about that. It was, you were almost other if you didn't drink. I don't know if you all, did you all feel the same?
When I stopped?
Yeah.
Or when
you started, either way.
Oh, yeah, both. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just that societal pressure, peer pressure. I don't know. How about you, Andy? You said seventh grade. Who was drinking in your circle?
You know, just the cool kids, yeah. Right? You know, that was the sort of the thing. And I wasn't one of the cool kids, and I never could really do it very well, you know. But, you know, by the time college hit or whatever, it was a daily part of – not daily. I wouldn't say necessarily daily, but a part of life for sure, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's super – very common. In fact, just in maybe not even just our culture, not even just the U.S. I was going to say
right.
In the U.S., but – yeah, worldwide. What prompted you to want to make that
to stop?
Yeah,
someone very close to me, my husband. but he stopped drinking, and we were kind of like we weren't really together at the time. We had like broken up, and then he was in a play in Washington D.C. and I was going to go visit him, and I was like really nervous because I was like, what are we going to do? Because like
Riley.
When we had been dating in the past, like we tried to go bowling once and it was like, it was like league night and we're like, well, I guess we'll just go back to the triangle. Like we couldn't think of anything else to do. And when he had stopped drinking, I was like, I don't know what we're going to do. And we were going to Washington, D.C. Like there's a lot
to
do.
Yeah.
But I was really freaked out. And when I hadn't stopped drinking before then, but I knew like it wouldn't be the top thing. And what I realized, like I thought when I started drinking, because I grew up really religious, so I didn't stop drinking until college. Like it was sort of like a form of rebellion. And I thought that drinking was everything. And then I realized like, oh, drinking is actually limiting me because like my days were the end of like the day was always kind of marked with the drink at the end of the day. Or like when I would go on a trip, it would be like, we need to get a case of beer or we need to make sure that whatever restaurant we're going to has a full bar. Like, yeah. I'm not just going to go somewhere that has beer and wine. Like I need the full bar. And when I remember we were like walking around D.C. and we were like, I wonder what we can eat. And we like could eat anything. And we went to Shake Shack. And I know that that seems like so simple, but it was probably one of the most exciting moments for me because I'm like, oh, we can just go and eat a burger and fries and a milkshake and then we can go to a museum and then we can just go to bed and feel good in the morning. And what I realized, like, that taking away alcohol just opened everything up for me when I think I had been conditioned to believe the opposite.
Was it pretty easy for you to quit?
No, oh, no. Okay. I mean, I was freaked out. I think the thing that impacted me the most that I remember are my friendships. Because I had a lot of friends look at me differently. I remember, like, I had this one friend and we would go to Louis every single night. And I thought we were having these most in-depth conversations. I can't remember any of the conversations we had, but right. We were going to save the world, at least by the end of the night. But the friendships that I did keep are much richer, you know? But I think people, like, I realized people were a little freaked out by me. I realized that shift. But as the years progress with not drinking, it's like my entire foundation. And, you know, I've had a few moments of been like, oh, let me try that cocktail. Let me sip it, you know. But I'm like, oh, I'm so happy that, like, that's just not how it used to be. And, yeah. I mean, I didn't think that I had a problem because I always compared myself to everybody. So I'm like, well, I don't drink like that, you know, because I think that I felt conditioned that if you have a problem, that's your problem, you know, and like you better control it. And if you don't, then you're not okay. And I kind of believe that's a little bit of a lie now. I think I'm a little bit kind of an extreme. And I think that alcohol is a pretty dangerous drug, but we're just somehow culturally conditioned to just think that we're in so much control. Yeah.
Alicia, tell me a little bit about, you know, what was a decision point for you?
I feel like I had a lot of different reasons, but I had, at the point where I decided to quit about 8 years ago, I kind of had a nagging voice, mostly my dad, and I say that with love, like, because my parents were always so... generally very gentle with me, like, you know, alcohol's a depressant, and particularly when I was struggling with my mental health, which was a lot, from like 16 to 25, and I didn't quit till I was 30, I didn't want to be depressed anymore, and I wanted to be fully present for life and the people in my life, And I also felt really limited, like I have more potential, and I wanted to, like, step into my career and other things, but my family was in my head when I realized I wanted to stop.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, away.
Yeah, away.
Scott, Sheesh. Yeah, just tell me more about what was it that inspired you not just to make the move of quitting drinking, but then to tell the story of it and try to incorporate that larger story.
Yeah. So let's see. I stopped drinking in January 4th, 2020, right before the pandemic. And then that's also when I was transitioning out of working here, which I absolutely loved, but starting my own business. And of course, the pandemic happened. So a lot of changes mm-hmm. for me that year. And I was looking for projects, thinking of what to do. And then sometime in 2022, I was doing all this work. You know, I don't know about all of you, but once you make that choice to stop drinking, as somebody says in the documentary, that's like half the battle. And then there's like a bunch of work to do on yourself. Like, why were you drinking as much as you were? So I was starting to go through that work with a therapist and just with friends and otherwise. And I'm like, well, what do? I tell stories. Like, that's my job, right, is to write stories and work in media. And, you know, I have a background in print and journalism and then also filmmaking. And it was a really neat opportunity just to put my work on screen, I thought, because that way I could share. I felt like if I share my process and the process of others in my community, maybe I can share what Allison kind of sort of did for me with other people. Like, give people an excuse, not necessarily to stop or whatever, but to at least sort of objectively look at what we're putting in our bodies and why.
Yeah,
so it was very natural for me to just start. It's like, hey, I'd really like to talk to Allison more about this. oh, I love cameras. I love lights. I love audio. I love interviewing people. Yeah. Let's do that.
So how did you tell me about this kind of structure of the film? Is it a collection of a series of interviews that are kind of interspersed? Is it, do you stay with one subject for a while? How do you?
Yeah, good question. So my writing background is creative nonfiction, so like memoirs and personal essays, right? So I took that, so let's say memoir and then a documentary, and if you put them together, it's a memoir-umentary, if you will.
So. Very nice.
Docu-R.
Yeah. Trademark.
Yeah, it's thank you. Yep, yeah, yep. Yeah. Copyright right here, KTOO with Andy Quinn in 2026. And so you follow this arc of me starting to drink at 14, and you see these sort of places in my life in animation. So when I started to drink at 14, we start there. And then along the way, and then you see this arc all the way till present. And then along the way, you see all these really questionable choices, usually in animation, that I made in my 30 years as a drinker. I stopped when I was 14 to 44. Along the way, you meet people like Tuku Hani and Alicia, who add commentary and their experience. Like, so you see what's happening to me, but you see that I'm not alone and there's other people just like me. And then you meet doctors and therapists who sort of give commentary as well, like why I probably did these things, you know, what was behind some of these behaviors from a professional standpoint. So yeah, there's medical providers and therapists involved.
So you're kind of demonstrating like the work, the internal work you did, you're sort of demonstrating that and giving that a narrative in the film.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. Mm. Yeah. And again, trying to keep it objective and just sort of looking at relationships with alcohol, showing them, trying not to tell people what to do, but just adding information. There's some statistics here and there. Those kind of things, but mostly just voices of people who have experience as drinkers. And
I wonder, did it enter your mind, like, it seems like it's a heavy subject,
yeah,
right? And you don't want necessarily to make a film that's just like a load,
right?
People are like, oh, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So how did you intersperse? And I'm sure a lot of that is because you interviewed interesting people,
right?
That kind of thing. But how did you think about that? Is that did you...
Sure,
you know, to still bring a narrative that isn't just an instructive moral piece.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. So I think the animations, they're kind of fun and comical. Watching mm-hmm. teenage me do some really dumb stuff, so that's kind of funny. Not funny, but funny. You know, then the score is a total custom score by Chuck Indus to Ed Littlefield. So all this percussion, custom
cool.
made for the entire film. So you have this beautiful music background.
He's doing a lot these days.
Right?
That guy is
I know, the symphony
yes.
this weekend. He's
incredible.
So prolific. And then Dara Rilatos also sings in it. And let's see, yeah, just various voices. You know, trying to, I play folk music as well. And sometimes you can have a really sad song, a sad story, but you can juxtapose that with a beautiful melody of the instruments, right? I'm hoping that, you know, this heavy subject is juxtaposed by a lot of art and is interesting for people to watch.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it. Well, Tuku Hani, tell me your reason for deciding to tell this story publicly. Why would you, this is a personal thing, right?
And it's neither of them have seen it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I was told I wouldn't be on it.
Yes. I'm in it.
Well, those were cameras?
Okay, sorry. Because Scott's my friend, and I also, when I was like going through the process before I decided to quit, I listened to a lot of different people share their stories and read books and found those stories very helpful. So I thought that maybe if by sharing our story, that would help other people who might be thinking about not drinking anymore either.
And Allison, were you aware that what you're telling Scott that at that moment was a turning point for him, or an examination that he started having?
I did, only because I ran into him. I think he was on his bike. It was very early COVID, and I remember I was like going on a hike or something.
Trying
not to
be
brag.
Outdoors, yes. I know. We were all trying to be outdoors then. Yes.
And do you remember that? And we were like, on Crow Hill.
Yeah.
And he was like, "Oh, Allison, I need to tell you what you said." And I was like, "Oh my gosh." You know, I remember that moment. And I think I came home and I told my husband, I'm like, "Scott just said that." Because, like, my husband and I talk a lot about not drinking and how grateful we are that we don't. And, like, I knew that. And then it was overwhelming when he said that he was making this documentary. And it's like, I love what you said, Alicia, about, like, stories. And stories are, like, the foundation of, like, everything. It's like who we are. It's why we live. That's what brings us together. But I'm nervous because what you say on film is, like, exciting. I mean, like, I'm on the radio now and I don't know what I'm saying, and I can just go home and they're like, "Here's a recording," and I'm like, "Don't worry, I'm not going to listen to
it." Allison, that's the secret. That's the secret.
Never
worry about what you're saying.
I will say, like, when I came home after filming, I was like, I was really excited. I don't know what I said. So I'm excited to see what I said, and I'm nervous at the same time. But yeah. I don't know. I'm used to being embarrassed, so.
Well, you're a performer, so, I mean, in that way, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that I will be.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm excited.
Scott, we want to get to the air dates and all that stuff that's happening, but just a little bit, a minute or so on just the process from thinking of this as an idea to then, was it a Kickstarter that I ended up giving to, or what was it? There was something that a lot of people were able to, you know, throw a couple bucks your way and say, yes, go forth as much as you can with this. And then kind of, tell me about the process of getting something like this done.
So I was looking at some dates today in prep for this interview, and my first interview was with Allison, and that was in 2022. Yeah. In February, we did that interview at Studio A. So... but I conceived of the whole thing in the fall, and I was thinking about fundraising and different ways to do it. And then I was so lucky to get partnered up with the Juno Community Foundation. And if they see a project that they like and they liked this one, then they run it by the board and they'll accept you as a project. So by becoming part of the Juno Community Foundation, Kickstarter and those other forms, I think, can be really great for a lot of artists or, you know, organizations. This one happened to work, and I thought, hey, any extras, you know, they take a little off the top, Kickstarter, whoever. I'm like, oh, this will go to the Juno Community Foundation. And then I also partnered with the Jack. And so that's basically, we did a little bit of like a DIY crowdfunding thing through them. You know, I made a video on Facebook, and I actually got a ton of feedback from just that crowdfunding video. I don't know if that's what you
saw.
That
must have been it.
And I came on like Juno Afternoon as well. But just, I started getting a ton of feedback because people, what they told me is they hadn't seen this approach to drinking before, just sort of this objective, not super heavy look. And a lot of people answered the call and a lot of people contributed, which I'm so thankful for.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Juno Community Foundation helped me with grant funding and stuff like that. So we got some grants and here we are.
That's awesome. So the sneak preview show is on Tuesday, right?
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tell me about the sneak preview and then the subsequent broadcasts on
That's
KTOO
right.
statewide, right?
That's right.
Yeah, this is exciting.
So exciting. Been working with Kelly Birkinshaw and company here at KTOO 360 TV. I'll get to that in just a sec. So Tuesday night, there are two screenings, actually. And if you're a funder, or like you, Andy, you contributed.
Hey.
You can come to the super secret 5:30 showing.
And go, don't.
Okay. But you have to RSVP. And if you're a funder, you've received an email that's to RSVP. And participants, you do that too. So we'll save your seats.
Okay.
I'm coming.
Okay. Thank you, Allison. Put that in spreadsheet right here. And another contributor, Steve Sue Wing, is making the whole night possible by contributing and renting the theater. And also for that first screening at 5:30 for funders, all of the concessions are taken care of. Thanks to Steve Sue Wing.
Oh, candy for dinner.
And he gave me permission to share that today he is a person who's been alcohol-free for 464 days.
Hey, all right.
So big
Very
thanks
cool.
to Steve.
I'm gonna cheer Steve.
Okay, but if you're not a funder, there's a 7 o'clock showing, and that's also free, but not free popcorn.
Mm.
But you could still become a funder and get free popcorn if you go to earnestdrinker.com.
Yes. Yes.
Now it's like, how much popcorn can I get for this contribution? People are doing the math.
How many Dixie cups of
But that's awesome.
Yeah,
so,
and seriously, like people that are like freshly stopped drinking, like they're going to run out of candy.
Oh, yeah. That's it, right? Once you stop drinking, yeah. The sugar.
Oh,
yeah. Oh man.
So the 7 o'clock is the show for the general public on Tuesday at the Gold Town Theater.
Yep.
That's super exciting. Then K2 is going to start broadcasting this starting on Thursday. Is that right?
That's right. Okay. 9 p.m. Yep. And I have all these dates and times at earnestdrinker.com.
Oh, okay. So I know that's at 9 p.m. on Thursday, Saturday at 5 p.m., Sunday at 7 p.m.
Yeah.
Those are the times that they're going to be showing. But that premiere is going to be happening at Gold Town Theater Tuesday the 21st, 7 p.m., and then you can catch it on air. It's exciting to think about just catching them both, just to see it on air.
Mm-hmm.
You guys coming through, an animated Scott Burton running around as a 14-year-old. I love it. All right. Well, thanks to all of you for coming in, and thanks, Scott, for doing this work. It's so exciting to see it come to fruition and to see it completed. It must be incredibly gratifying to know that you got through this project. And do you love it? Are you happy with it?
I am super happy with
good.
It. I'm
good.
Thrilled. A little nervous.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
It's a big piece of art that I'm putting out into the world. But I'm really thankful for it. And I need to stay... I'm so thankful to be here on this land and with all of you folks. Like, this community has been so good to me. This place and this community has been so good to me over the years. So a lot of gratitude.
Well, thanks so much for coming in. That's Scott Burton once again. The film is Earnest Drinker, a film about relationships with alcohol. The preview is happening at the Gold Town Theater on Tuesday at 7 p.m., and it starts airing on KTOO Thursday the 23rd at 9 p.m. What an exciting development. It's very cool. Congratulations, and thanks to all you for coming in.
Thanks, Andy.
Okay.
Thank you. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on community-supported KTOO. Joining me now, members of the Byrne Thompson Writers Group, Bill Merck and Richard Stokes are here. Thanks to both of you for coming in.
Good to
see you here. And you guys have got a writer group poetry reading at the City Museum that's coming up on Saturday. Tell me a little bit about what you're hoping to do there.
Well,
read poetry,
and,
I think,
and,
right?
Read
yeah.
poetry. And before I say that, let me, you know, give a bouquet to Mary Lou Sparks, who's, you know, has been here in previous years and sort of trying to pass the torch this year to Hallie Denton. And so, you know, I don't want Mary Lou to be forgotten in this series.
Yeah.
Because she was very, very successful and aggressive of keeping it alive, even when the Byrne Thompson group was sort of scraping bottom there for a couple of years. But it looks like that I don't know if I have the final tally, but I think there's 10 or 11 readers, and we're talking 4 or 5 minutes a piece, refreshments after.
So, yeah.
You know, somebody could come for cookies, and if they could endure a few minutes of poetry.
Tell me about why you feel it's important to have a reading of poetry like this.
Well, first of all, happy Poetry Month.
Oh, okay. I did not know.
No, no. April is National Poetry
okay.
Month.
Okay, all right.
And I've been out of touch for a while with Juno, but my understanding is that Byrne Thompson has been participating in an annual event. Richard, correct me if I'm wrong.
You're right. You're correct.
And Byrne Thompson, the group has been together since...
I guess I'm the historian in the group.
This is true.
That's what you get for getting old.
You acquire these responsibilities.
Yeah.
Yes.
but the group, the best that I have put together the history is the group started with Kristen Hutchinson back in 2005, sort of through the library, and Kristen got the poetry omnibus, the poetry placards on the bus started. And Byrne Thompson joined that group like a year later, and Kristen left town, and Byrne more or less took over and held the group together until her death in 2013. We had dropped to like three of us for several years, I think. But by the time of Byrne's death, the group was flourishing, and we consistently have six to eight people at a meeting every 2 weeks.
Nice, yeah. The question I had before was just about reading poetry out loud. Why, you know, can you talk a little bit about why you feel like that's an important piece of how poetry should be consumed?
Well, in our group, in our group, it's most useful for critiques. Everybody reads, and then people comment and, you know, point out things that were wonderful and things that were confusing. But poetry, and I think Bill can add more to this. I mean, it should be spoken. I mean, there's a lot to the sound and rhythm that one does not get just reading it on a flat page. My poetry is probably readable on a flat page better than most. But.
Well, it's true. And you and I have talked when I was with the Wishkanadei group, which was a wonderful group. Pandemic put that to bed, unfortunately. Again, I've been out of town for a few years, but that always seemed to fill a void, and it was always well attended and seemed to be well appreciated. And it was an opportunity for people to share their words. As Richard is saying, poetry works on the page, but I think poetry also works extremely well vocally, whether with music or unaccompanied or whatever. It's a great opportunity for people to share their work. It's a good opportunity for people to get up in front of people. Not everybody's comfortable doing that. Tomorrow's going to be a great opportunity for us. Some of our folks seem to be a little more reticent than others to get up and speak. And, you know, it's a skill. And sometimes the poem presents itself differently orally than it would on the page, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So anyway, like Richard's saying, we get together twice a month to workshop, and it's a very welcoming, sharing, supportive community. And even when some of us were out of town, we could still participate through Zoom. I mean, this thing's been going on it's a pretty dedicated group of folks.
Yeah, that's
honestly great.
Yeah. Well, I'd love to have you demonstrate the power of the oral spoken poem. Richard, I'll call on you first if you wouldn't mind reading us a poem of yours.
I'll do this. This is certainly not my most serious or sophisticated poem. It is something that was inspired on a trip I just got back from. This friend of mine in a conversation said something to like, a poem is a little bit like a baby, that it requires a lot of attention. And this inspired me to write the following. Not all babies are cute, not as demanding as a baby, but a poem once birthed requires care. The poet must deal with waste of words that signal development, must put up with growing pains of revision. And when the reading finally comes, you lay the little darling before your friends and hope you don't hear whispers like, I'd never tell the parents, but by golly, that's an ugly baby.
That is brand new.
Very good. Thank you. Bill, do you have one that you would...
I could probably find one here.
Yeah.
We had one other person I'd like to give a shout out to is Tripp Krause. Tripp puts together a second Sunday gathering at Goldtown. We were just there this last Sunday, 2 hours Sunday afternoon from 2 to 4. If people are interested, that's more of an open mic, less of a workshop. It's just a chance, again, to get up, share your words, and meet some other folks, like-minded people who enjoy writing, and always a good turnout there, and always some good work. There are a lot of good writers in this town.
Yeah,
When I was away, I did miss the creativity in this community because Folk Fest alone will show you that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But there was just so much, there's just so much talent in this town. I'm just always impressed with, again, how supportive and how creative the community can be. So anyway.
Yeah. Well, I agree wholeheartedly.
No surprise here. Right?
Yeah.
Well, let me read you one. This is from a book I wrote years ago, and it's called Answering the Silent Call. It is spring, so this is a spring poem. It's a reluctant spring, but it's spring nonetheless. Answering the Silent Call. It starts beneath the ice, a quiet, surrendering sound rising to the sky like mist. Carried on a silent wind, this scent of wildflowers filtering down, of water breaking free beneath the greening reach of aspen. So soft, so quiet. Suddenly, the ears are filled with whisper. Loons and large white geese stretch wings into a growing warmth. And as their cries echo back through the memory of southern minds, we pause again, remembering. Ours is a call that rises out of spring. Each day the sun climbs higher, and as the snow retreats, it draws us following like shadow.
Well, that's very nice.
Thank you very much.
Yes, I appreciate that. Well, Bill and Richard, thanks so much for coming in. Once again, it's the Byrne Thompson Writers Group. You're having a poetry reading at the City Museum. It's going to be happening Saturday, and it's from 1:30 to 3:30. As you said, light refreshments. Sounds lovely. Sounds like a really nice time. When do you? How many total people do you think will be reading? And maybe
I think 10 or 11
yeah.
reading. And last year we had Bill was saying that he thought we had about 20 people. There that were not readers last year, and if so, that if anything was a larger crowd than usual, you know, Saturday afternoon we usually have a few spouses and, you know, friends
sure.
that have come in at gunpoint and this sort of thing. So, but it should be fun, and I doubt if it will last the full 2 hours. Typically, an hour. Hour, 15 minutes, hour and a half.
Okay. So get there at 1:30 for the Writers Group poetry reading. Once again, it's at the City Museum. It's happening Saturday at 1:30. Bill and Richard, thanks so much for coming in. Really appreciate talking to you and seeing you guys again.
If people do have questions, there are some signs up and about around downtown Lemon Creek and in the valley. So should be fun. Should be a good opportunity. Get out and stretch your legs and stretch your ears.
Yes.
Stretch your ears.
And your mind. Yeah. Yes. You're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTO. I'm your host, Andy Klein. And the folks from Cancer Connection have joined me here. They're going to be doing a peer buddy workshop this Saturday. It's going to also get recorded, so it's going to be able to be across the area. And Claire Richardson, Ruth Johnson, and Lori Ortiz coming up from Ketchikan all here with us right now. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Yeah, really appreciate it. So, Ruth, I'll start with you as the honorary board member of Cancer Connection. Tell us just a little bit about this specific workshop, and then we can talk more about all the things that Cancer Connection does.
So Let's Talk is a program that we've had in place for quite a while, but we haven't done a training since before COVID. And our founder, Mike Miller, found a program similar to this when he was going through cancer treatment at Oregon Health Sciences in Portland, Oregon, 20, 25 years ago. And a social worker from that program came up and developed our first curriculum. And it was getting a little long in the tooth. So Lori Ortiz from Ketchikan rewrote our whole program. And she and Claire Richardson worked together as a team. And I did the training last year that they did for the board to work out the kinks and then figure out a time to schedule
it. Well, Lori, what were some of the things that I get what you're saying and hadn't been looked at for a while, but what were some of the things that stood out to you that needed updating?
Well, first of all, just the paper materials had some things that were like mimeographed and that kind of thing. So
they're purple looking still.
Smelled funny.
Yes, I love that smell.
You know, it just went along with some things about how we know adults learn now, updated communication things, things we know about boundaries. And
Great. Well, was that it sounds like a pretty big task to take that on. Was that a pretty big effort?
I don't know. It was a joyful effort.
Good.
It was something I was really interested in. I'm a cancer survivor, too. So.
Yeah. And Claire, tell me about your contribution here. You're one of the leaders of the training. I know you. I know of many of the different hats you wear, so tell me which one you're wearing for this.
Well, I just want to say what was really cool was when Lori was working on the curriculum, what she brings to the training, and we have 20 people coming tomorrow, which is so exciting, and Lori recruited two people from Ketchikan, and they're going to be trained on Sunday with us to be trainers down in Ketchikan.
Oh, wow. So train the trainer kind of stuff.
So I have to say, one, kudos to Cancer Connection, and I think what's happening in our community is COVID really kind of blew things apart for all sorts of social interaction and also for support groups and like the Let's Talk Buddies. Things just sort of fell through the wayside. So finally, and thanks to some grants that Cancer Connection was able to get, they're able to revitalize this. And what Lori brought to the program is fun. And you think, oh, Cancer Connection, Let's Talk, it's going to be really serious. It's a fast-paced, fun training. And it's interactive. And part of the thing that I like to do in trainings, and I think that this is, you can have the 100 pages, and there's some incredible information here, but we're going to have some terrific guests. We're going to have an oncologist staffer come in to talk about cancer. We have a Cancer Connection board member who's a social worker with oncology, Erin, and will be here talking. So all 20 people who are coming, all women, I might say, are going to learn a lot more and how that relates to their journey with cancer. Most of these people have had cancer themselves. And I think what we're looking at in this training is you can have all this training, but what we're really looking for is to empower people to listen carefully. Being a buddy is somebody that if you have cancer, you might not want to share stuff with your spouse or your children or your neighbor, but a buddy is somebody who's been there, done that. It's not their story, it's your story, and they're there to listen, and I think it's really kind of cool. Just before we came on the air, you were talking about how you became a cancer buddy this past year after taking the training.
Well, let's talk about that concept of, we haven't talked about that concept of what a peer buddy is. So maybe, Lori, I'll ask you, tell me about this idea, the concept, and why this is something that's a beneficial thing to have people do.
Well, I just want to add on to what Claire was saying. When I had my own cancer experience, sometimes you have sadness or you're deeply worried about what the end game is, and you can't necessarily share that with your spouse. I mean, you can, but it might be a burden. And so having a buddy is someone that you can listen, debrief with, especially since they have had cancer mm-hmm. too, who will really understand, and you can be completely honest. So, and your cancer buddy is not going to give you advice. They're just going to be listening.
That's the part I was wondering about. What are those, and obviously that's part of the training, right? But what are those parameters you're trying to get across to people that you're training?
Well, one, that there's lots of resources. Mm-hmm. And Cancer Connection is a wealth of information. And so helping to guide people to Cancer Connection online or they're a phone call away, I think that's probably one of the gifts, is because also, you know, for many of us here in Southeast Alaska, we go to Seattle, Fred Hutch, Virginia Mason, Anchorage. There's oncology programs here in Juneau, but a lot of people have to travel. So how do we support people when they come back to Ketchikan or Sitka or Juneau? And so it's a peer support. They're not doctors. They're not specialists, but they're there to listen.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, and this goes for any health thing. Anyone who's been through a health thing has a real opinion, right, about, well, you got to do this. Boy, if you're going to get your knee replaced, this is what you got to do, right? And I think that must be a thing to have to untrain people from doing that are part of this. I'm guessing that's a big part of it.
That's a really good observation because it's something that Cancer Connection avoids, not just within this program, but always not telling people what to do. And it's difficult because there are so many choices now when you have a cancer diagnosis. There's lots of different paths to take. And your cancer buddy can talk to you from the survivor experience of what some of those choices are like. But as most of our cancer buddies do not suggest one over the other. It's your relationship with you and your physician to choose what's best for you. But that is the hard part about being a cancer patient, is making those choices. My husband and I both have been through that this year for the first time. And sometimes cancer buddies happen organically, you know, and organizations like ours have learned how beneficial through support groups it is to be. Your family is your family, but if they haven't had cancer, they don't know what that mm-hmm. means. They don't know what that feels like. You might be able, like Lori said, to talk more honestly and openly with somebody just because they share that diagnosis. They know what that means. They know what that feels like. And the training that these two offer is so helpful, because just because you've been down that road doesn't mean you know how to be a support person. You want to be. So this class really helps. It helped me learn about boundaries. It helped me learn about, I almost hate to use the words, they're sort of overused, but active listening and open-ended questions. You really can't get enough training on that and enough practice. You do a lot of role-playing in this class to really learn what that means and not run at the mouth like I can tend
to
do.
It's kind of funny that you mentioned that yeah. It's a class of women. You know, men have that thing of the solution,
do
right?
They know?
Oh, yes, it seems like.
Tell us more.
Well, I'll tell you. No, I mean, right? So that, you know, and getting out of that, instead of like saying, well, here's what has to happen. Instead, it's, as you say, there's so many choices. It's mm-hmm. become the problem in a way, that there's so many choices, so many different avenues mm-hmm. you can take depending on your diagnosis.
Right. Yeah. And we have some of those zingers, you know. There are things that people say. And I think what's great about this training is, even if somebody takes this course tomorrow and they don't become a cancer buddy for 6 months or a year, I guarantee they will use this role-playing exercises in daily life. And there's some of the ones that Lori had combined in this. One is, you know, never say, things will get better, I promise. And, you know, so what do you say? And so...
Okay, I have to throw this in.
Yeah.
The other one you never say is at least.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, that's an interesting, that's really interesting, right? You know, count your blessings kind of thing.
Everything
right?
happens for a reason.
Yeah.
And so we also then give you what you could say, like, oh, my friend, that sounds so hard. Or I would love, you know, God never gives us more than we can handle. How about saying something like, I would love to bring you a meal this week. Can I email you about that? Or... again, you're acknowledging what they're going through, but you're not telling them how to feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
Because I don't know what they're feeling. Only they know. And so even with all this training, it's, again, just coming in with a listening heart, and practice makes perfect.
That's what I was just about to ask that. You know, when people are thinking about, maybe there's someone out there who's not signed up this weekend but is interested in, what are the things that you most want people to come into the training prepared to do or open to do?
What they'll come away with, too, is that being present is enough. Like, lots of times, you don't need a toolbox. You just need to learn how to let go of things in your head and just be really present to a person. So coming to this training, thinking about being really present is what you need.
Yeah. What sort of people do you see in this training?
Angels.
Right.
Well, they can be all ages.
Yeah.
You know.
And people have been through cancer themselves, I think is very helpful. But I do think...
Is that a prerequisite of being a peer buddy?
Is it?
Yes. I think we offer the training to anybody because, as you say, it's a great communication tool. But generally, the intent is to, when someone calls Cancer Connection for a Let's Talk Buddy, it is somebody who's had the same diagnosis. Mm-hmm. So they definitely have the experience sharing.
Right.
One thing someone asked me about recently, though, and it might be an avenue we go to, is I talked to two people who were considering being volunteers, and they hadn't had cancer, but they had walked with their spouses or a family member through cancer. And I think that role is a good one to share with someone, too.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, and sometimes caregivers or partners, family members have come to support group meetings with the cancer survivor, too. Yeah.
And I think there's one secret sauce that we talk about that in our culture is very difficult, Western culture, and that's silence. And as a grief coach, I have found that to be an invaluable tool. And I think we're always thinking, what am I going to say?
Oh, I have a problem with that.
How am I going to do that? Yeah.
Yes, this personal problem I have.
Yeah. But it's the silence. And I think that maybe that's one of the great takeaways. And the other quick one is, people are surviving cancer for many, many years now, right? I mean, my mother wouldn't even say the word cancer. It was the C word.
Yeah.
I have friends that have lived many years stage 4 lung cancer. And so we're moving into a different modality with all these incredible advances with cancer treatments. And so I think it's even more important to have a buddy because you're going to be walking this for a long time.
Well, we're running out of time, but I just want to make sure we cover the nuts and bolts here. So this is happening on Saturday. You're having this one-day workshop. Those are for people who have already signed up, right? So
it's full.
It's full. It's full. But it's a really great thing for people to know about. And then K2 is recording this training so that then it can be used and available to other communities as well. So that's just a wonderful part of this as well, is that it's going to be something that can continue to help other people as well. Anything else that we want to cover? We just have about 30 seconds left here to go. I just want to make sure I don't skip anything that you wanted to cover. But what a fascinating conversation, and it's an incredible program. It makes so much sense, right, to have people who not only have gone through the experience but have training about how to actively help.
Well, the dream is to get it out to other smaller communities all around Southeast. So there are trainers training volunteers in several communities.
Yeah, Cancer Connection's mission is to serve not just the community of Juneau, but all the communities in the Southeast.
Right.
So we're hoping that we can.
So if people out there are in smaller communities,
give Cancer Connection a call.
All right. Well, thank you so much, everyone, for coming in. Claire Richardson, Ruth Johnson, and Lori Ortiz, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Wonderful to have you all in here, and thanks for the great work you're doing.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
That's going to do it for Juneau Afternoon, broadcast live on KTOO 104.3 FM and online at ktoo.org. Rebroadcast on this station at 7 p.m. I'm Andy Klein. Thanks so much for listening today, and have a great weekend.